your work, how your boss is a jerk. We talk about your church and your head when it hurts. We talk about the troubles you've been having with your brother, about your daddy and your mother and your crazy ex-lover. We talk about your friends and the places that you've been. We talk about your skin and the dimples on your chin, the polish on your toes and the run in your holes. And God knows we're gonna talk about your clothes. You know talking about you makes me smile. But every once in a while, I wanna talk about me, wanna talk about I, wanna talk about number one. Oh my, me, my, what I think, what I like, what I know, what I want, what I see. I like talking about you, usually. But occasionally, I wanna talk about me. I wanna talk about me. We talk about your dreams and we talk about your schemes, your high school team and your moisturizer cream. We talk about your Nana up in Muncie, Indiana. We talk about your grandma down in Alabama. We talk about your guys of every shape and size, the ones that you despise and the ones you idolize. We talk about your heart, about your brains and your smarts and your medical charts and when you start. You know talking about you makes me grin. But every now and then, I wanna talk about me, wanna talk about I, wanna talk about number one. Oh my, me, my, what I think, what I like, what I know, what I want, what I see. I like talking about you, usually. But occasionally, I wanna talk about me. 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 Wanna talk about I. Wanna talk about number one. Oh my, me, my. What I think, what I like, what I know, what I want, what I see. I like talking about you, usually. But occasionally, I wanna talk about me. I wanna talk about me.
That was Toby Keith. I want to talk about me. Welcome, everybody, to Carry the Message, Not the Wreckage. This is a speaker workshop, and we're going to talk about you and your story and how do we carry that. So I want to just welcome everybody to, this is actually a speaker workshop where you can take your story. We're going to figure a way to bump it up a level. You know, everyone's got a story. Some people are better at telling stories than others. And we're going to look at some of the things that we can do to convey our story in an interesting and impactful way. So my name's Cameron. I'm a member of Cocaine Anonymous. My sobriety date's November 21st, 2003. And I've been a speaker and a facilitator of 12-step recovery. I've spoken to AA, CA, NA, SLAA, TODA, Al-Anon. I've done a lot of different 12-step talks. I've spoken at roundups, conventions, world conventions. I've talked to audience pretty much all over the world. The 12 steps, 4 hours workshop that I do with some of the other facilitators. We've had 82 different countries represented in that presentation in the audience. I've taught steps, traditions, concepts. And prior to my recovery, I used to teach the art of public speaking, how to do better keynotes, overcoming the fears of speaking, structuring your talk, dynamics for excellent presentations, powerful openings, closings, key messaging, etc. And it's our hope here, the CA service sponsorship presentation will prove helpful to those who wish to carry the message to other addicts who still suffer across the rooms of 12-step recovery. So my take-home message is you're all going to become circuit speakers. Yay, that sounds pretty good, eh? Join me on the circuit. It's a lot of fun. Well, not so much. I don't like traveling. I'm trying to convince the fellowship to fly me first class. because being crammed into an economy seat and traveling for 7 hours on a plane is brutal. Okay, so we're going to get right into it. So let me just share the screen with you. Go. And okay. So once again, my name's Cameron and a member of Cocaine Anonymous. This is Carry the Message, Not the Wreckage, and Winning the Newcomer's Confidence, a 12-step speaker workshop. So Carry the Message, Not the Wreckage. Each individual in their personal stories describes, and this is key here, describes in their own language and from their own point of view, the way they established a relationship with God. You know, the message we carry in 12 steps is a spiritual moral approach. I always think, you know, as sponsors, we're like spiritual pimps. The message we're carrying is how to broker a relationship with the one who's got all the power. And we can only clear the ground a bit when we're talking and carrying the message to the addict. But our testimony, if it's done well, sweeps away prejudice from the newcomer or the prospect who thinks there may be a way out for them. And I believe every addict has a story. You all have a story to tell. And somewhere in the rooms of 12 steps, there is a particular ear that needs to hear your story. You know, they need to identify, hey, I'm like you, you're like me, but you don't do it anymore. And I want what you have. And so your recovery story as an ex-problematic, I believe, is of extreme importance. It's vital to our fellowship. And by sharing what happened and what we're like today, the newcomer comes to believe that there's hope that they too can escape their difficulties and we can thus win the newcomer's confidence. And the book is, our big book is very instructive, not only in terms of how to carry the message, but how we speak to the newcomer and how we deliver our message. And, it describes in our own language from our own point of view. So often I hear people just quote the big book. I don't mind a quote from the big book. I do it myself. But sometimes, you know, it's just quote after quote and they read their, I can read a big book. Most of us can read the big book. But what we want to do, I remember I was at a big book step study and this person says, yeah, I'd like to look at this line. Rarely do we see a person fail, emphasize that word fail, who thoroughly follows our path. I really love that line. Thank you very much. And I go, what the heck does that mean? Right. In our own, you can take a quote like that, but let's work it and let's tease out from our own experience on the ground experience of what that really means. To rarely see a person fail who thoroughly follows our path. So we're going to talk about our own words and our own language. We carry the message, not the wreckage. We must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, morbid reflection. Again, our big book is very specific. It tells us what we need to do. We don't want to diminish our usefulness to others. So often I've been in the rooms of 12 steps and, you know, we go into these long drunkalogs, war stories. I hear a lot of junkie pride stories. I even hear ramblings and incoherent thoughts in the minutia of one's stream of consciousness as they go to the podium. And I find that's not the most effective way. And it's about understanding what we need to say without saying too much. And as it shows here in my two favorite emojis and just a short clip from one of my favorite speaker songs, here it is.
You talk too much, you worry me to death. You talk too much, you even worry my pet. You just talk too much.
And that's what we don't want to do. You got to know when to shut up too in a talk. Sometimes I'll hear someone speaking and I think they're coming to the end. And I go, oh God, that's great. And then they go on for another 10, 15 minutes on some other tangent. So we want to know When do we stop talking? You know, how much is enough? You know, whenever I'm at a speaker presentation, I hear the speaker, I know I'm in for one of those long, tiresome shares when the speaker starts with, this is more like AA, "I remember my first drink. I was in my mother's third trimester, and I realized I didn't drink like other fetuses." And I go, oh God, here we go. And it's 40 to 45 minutes of this long-winded war story. Now, the point I make with that is, I already know how to drink. I already know how to use drugs, right? That's not why I'm here. I'm an expert at that. And I think most people in the rooms are the expert. Yet I hear the war story belabored and stretched out ad nauseum in some speaker meetings. And I don't find that as an effective way to win the newcomers confident, other than they realize, well, he really knows how to drink. Boy, I could learn something from him, right? Okay. So know how much to say, know when to wrap it up. Okay, for today, our learning objectives. By the end of this presentation, and as I said earlier, I will post the audio to this presentation along with the slideshow so you can review it and revisit, make your own notes, and come join me on the circuit. You're going to learn 10 strategies for overcoming the fear of speaking in front of an audience, list 5 ways to conduct yourself when speaking virtually or in person. There's a lot of both that goes on now, and each approach is somewhat different. Identify 3 major benefits to speaking to a 12-step meeting or event. List 3 key elements for a compelling story. Identify 3 ways to win the confidence of a newcomer. Know 3 essential components for a well-structured story. Learn 3 ways to dynamically open your share. Know 4 ways to identify and connect with your audience. Identify 5 important ways to describe what happened. And describe 3 ways to inspire others to work their program. And lastly, learn 3 approaches to dynamically close your talk. Now, in this presentation, I've been accused, oh, Cameron, you're like that Toastmasters organization where you're creating cardboard speakers, little Cameron wannabes. The fellowship does not need another Cameron. I remember my good friend Chris R. out of Texas. You know, when he's a real fire and brimstone big book thumper. And when he first started talking with the passion and the vim and the vigor of his talk, people were really, they wanted to be just like him. And it had all these little Chris R. wannabes running around terrorizing the meetings in Austin, Texas. That's not what we're here to do. What I really would love to see happen is for you to be outrageously you. Dare to be outrageously yourself, especially when it comes to your share. Most people won't. They're too frightened to do it. But dare to be outrageously yourself and create your own style. The spirit will work through you in a way that's unique to you. My good friend, Nikki, some of you might know Nikki. She's my neighbor, and I took her through the 12 steps. And God speaks through her in a loud way. Like, she's really loud and, you know, passionate and fire and brimstone and all. And that's just the way her spirit works through her. Like, the spirit works through me in the way that it does. And to be attuned and to be sensitive to how the spirit wishes for to carry that message through you, be open to that. And that's what we're really here to do, to hear your story in a way that really resonates in the hearts of the newcomer. Okay. Oh yeah, I get to talk about money. We have a 7th tradition here. And if you find this workshop useful and helpful, we ask that you consider making a 7th donation to our website. Your donation helps to offset our Zoom costs, our website costs. Our needs are simple: an app to host our presentation, which we use Zoom, and our website to carry the message. So we ask those of you, if you can give a generous donation of 20, 10, or 5, whatever you can afford, it goes a long way into ensuring that this workshop continues. I try to do 4 of these workshops a year, and that's our website, caservicesponsorship.org. It connects you to our PayPal account, and And we really appreciate that. And just, you know, I love Zoom as an andragogical tool. I just really love what you can do with Zoom. And one of it is I get to play all kinds of music. And this is my seventh tradition song here.
Your love gives me such a thrill. But your love won't pay my bills. I want money.
I love Zoom. It's so much fun. Okay. All right. Fear of public speaking. Now, the fear of public speaking affects 1 in 4 of the general public. It's one of the biggest fears. So I want to just, I'm going to stop the share here for a moment and open it up. I'd like to invite you to come in and weigh in on this. What are some of the fears that we have when we go up to the podium to speak, or when you're being asked to speak? What are some of the fears that pop up? You can unmute yourselves and just kind of weigh in. Just raise your virtual hand and I'll call in. What are some of the fears that we experience? Anyone had to speak recently and some intrepidation, or you've been asked to speak and, oh my God, what am I going to do? Luminous Lisa, go ahead.
I would say unworthiness, that my story isn't going to reach other people. Therefore, I shouldn't even open my mouth. That's a fear. My first fear that comes into my head.
Right. Yeah. Am I really worthy to stand at the podium and carry a message to all these people, especially if you've got a really big audience? I think the biggest audience I've done is about 400, 450. I would love to do World AA, 55,000 people. I could really get into that. But yeah, worthiness. Am I worthy to speak? Why is my message? What could be possibly interesting about my message? Larissa.
Obviously, fear of speaking in front of people. But my biggest fear is staying in the problem, because that's my whole life. My whole life is the problem, and getting into the solution quicker.
So when you're speaking, getting stuck in the problem and not moving on to the solution?
Trying to make a point in the solution.
Right.
I can help you with the waiting room if you co-host me.
Oh, well, thanks, Larissa. I'll do that right now. There you go. Okay. Yeah. Getting stuck, missing the point of what it is you're there to share. Karen.
Yeah, I think getting lost and kind of forgetting what I'm trying to say and not making sense. That's like,
You know, that's a common fear I've heard over the years in teaching speaking, is getting lost, losing your place. You know, worse yet, you've memorized your talk and then all of a sudden you hit a blank spot and you can't think of what you're supposed to say next, and panic sets in. And that comes up for a lot of people. Thank you. Regina.
Hi, everybody. We say it Regina in California.
Regina, got it.
Thank you. Good to be here. Relate to everything that's been said. I think inserting pauses. I notice when I'm nervous, I get really speedy, and also salient parts of my story. And I'm not interested in a drunk-a-log or sharing one, but what's salient? So thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting thought, because there's a sense of tempo when we speak. We don't want to speak too slow. We don't want to speak too fast that they can't hear it. I tend to use a faster tempo when I speak, but each person has a certain style, and of course, varying the style. Sometimes you want to rapid fire. Other times you want to pause for effect. And we'll talk more about that a little later on in the presentation. Leslie.
Leslie, grateful, recovered alcoholic. Two things. One, that I'm all over the place when I share. My brain is like a Rolodex and everything kind of goes into another. And the other one, I keep thinking of my old sponsor, who when somebody would go on too long, she'd say, "It's not a speaker's meeting." So.
Right. Sharing too long. Yeah, I get it. I love, what's the old adage, you know, a bird loves the sound of its own song. Right. I love the sound of my own song. I was born in the year of the rooster, 1957. My wife, Nina, was born in the year of the rooster, 1957. And she's a keynote speaker. So we're really fighting for one another's podium around the house. And we tease each other. I'll say to my wife, "You like talking, don't you?" And she goes, "Are you kidding me?" That's the pot calling the kettle black. Anyhow, some of the other things I've seen in fears around speaking is looking incompetent, making mistakes, forgetting, you know, and again, not worthy, not much of what's already been brought up. And these are common fears. So what can we do about that?
You still have a hand up.
Oh, whose hand is up?
Chris's hand
went up. Oh, go ahead, Chris.
The fear of my hand being ignored. No, I guess I just want to make sure I'm doing an effective job of carrying the message and hitting all the key points.
Yeah, we want to look effective. We want to be competent. You know, I like it when people give me accolades and say that was a great share and, you know, all that sort of stuff. It's nice to get that kind of feedback. Nobody wants to hear. I remember the first share I did, it was for an AA meeting. And I'm a big book guy. And I walk in and I see this big banner that says, "Meeting makers make it." Oh God, it's one of these meetings. So I opened up in a way and I was very vulgar. And in AA, that's a bit of a faux pas. And I'll come back to that a little later on presentation. But at the end of my share, the room is dead quiet. They didn't even clap. And then I heard a person say, "Well, I didn't like that at all." Like it really bombed. And I learned a lot from that presentation. And we'll try to avert having you enjoy or go through that experience. Okay, fear of public speaking, 1 in 4. So do you know what most people are most afraid of? Spiders and snakes. Who's afraid of spiders and snakes? Raise your hand. Anyone got any fear? My mother was terrified of spiders. She'd go right off the deep end when she saw a spider. And a lot of people are afraid of snakes. Now, according to a 2022 poll, 1 in 3 North Americans have some fear of snakes, and 1 in 4 North Americans have a fear of spiders. And here's the kicker. My son, Victor, he's 40 now. He breeds spiders and snakes, not to mention hissing cockroaches and scorpions and all sorts of weird little beasties, which just makes my wife cringe. So why is Cameron talking about spiders and snakes in the middle of a 12-step recovery speaker workshop? Well, how do we overcome our fear of public speaking? We deliver a presentation on spiders and snakes. But seriously, I throw the humor in as a bonus. Okay. All right. 10 strategies for overcoming the fear of public speaking. Number one, structure your presentation. Avoid stream of consciousness sharing. Now, often I'm asked to share, like I was sharing earlier today for Purdy's Spiritual Cartel, and I had in my mind what I wanted to share, but you know, and I had a general structure in my mind, but it was the first time I kind of delivered it in the way I did. But I know my presentation so well because I've structured it. I've mapped out my key messaging, so I can mix it up and, you know, and it looks like stream of consciousness, or it looks like it's spontaneous, but it's not. I have a good idea of what I'm going to share, and it's because I've structured my presentation. And the trouble with stream of consciousness sharing is a person goes to the podium and out it comes. They don't even know what they're going to share, but out it comes and it rocks the room. It was the best share ever, but they can't duplicate it. Cause when you ask them, What that was amazing. What did you say? You know, and they can't remember either because it just came out of their head and emptied out of their minds and delivered to the room. Or just as conversely, it came off bad. It was a bomb. And they don't know what they said that resulted in that effect. So I'm not a big fan of stream of consciousness sharing. I take flack over that. Some people think, oh, you're taking the spontaneity out of it. It's not really genuine. It's more cardboard and stiff speaking. I don't agree with that. A good structured presentation to be mindful of the messaging you want to carry to the audience that resonates in the newcomer's ear. It goes, I'm like you, you're like me, but you don't do it anymore. And I want what you got. So I'm a big fan of structuring your presentation. And it's duplicatable when we do that. Number two, write down your presentation. And as I said earlier, use your own words. You want to avoid jargon. You want to avoid vulgar language. There's a time you might use vulgar language. I used to be really vulgar in my shares. And you can't. And some audiences won't hear it. Like AA, if I get vulgar in an AA meeting, they'll just shut down. They'll walk out. They won't even hear it. No matter how good the message is, they will not hear it if there's vulgar language in play. And so I really recommend downplaying it. You don't really need to use vulgar language. I still use it one-on-one, but I really try to curtail it a lot in my podium talks. The other thing you want to avoid is jargon, because jargon only works if you're in on it, right? Here in Toronto, there's a group of big book thumpers called the Muckers. And there's a passage in More About Alcoholism where they talk about the three different types of drinkers: the moderate drinker who can take it or leave it alone, the heavy drinker given sufficient reason they can stop or curtail it, and then the real alcoholic. Well, the Muckers redefined those types of drinkers as type ones, moderate drinkers, type two, heavy drinkers, and type three, real alcoholics. But they wouldn't let the audience in on that. They go, yeah, when I'm running into these type two alcoholic or type two drinkers in the rooms, you know, and they think they got a message and they're just killing people in the room. But the type three, they know what they're talking about. And the audience go, type two, type three. What is that person talking about? So if you're going to use jargon, then invite your audience in on what the jargon means. Like when I do the presentation on step one, I talk about logs. I define what a log is. A log is that human secular approach that seems to have power, but fails to curtail my drinking or using, like willpower or going to treatment or, you know, these various strategies we employ that fails to hold us in check. I call them logs. And I invite my audience in to understand what I mean by this metaphor and this analogy of a log as it relates to step one, so they understand what I'm talking about. But just to throw jargon into your talk without defining your terms, you're going to lose your audience that way. Also, you know, you need to be mindful of your audience too. Like when I speak in NA, and I don't do a lot of NA shares, but I have to be very mindful how I carry the message, because they're not a big book focused meeting. And if I start quoting the big book and talking about, you know, sobriety versus clean time, again, they disconnect. And like an AA or hearing vulgar language, they won't hear it and they shut down. So you want to be mindful of the presentation and jargon and vulgar language. And of course, rehearse your presentation. And that means practice, practice, practice. Well, what's the best way to practice? And I got accused, oh, you're that type of speaker that coaches people to stand in the mirror and speak to themselves. No, that's not the way I like to approach it. You know, we have infinite number of areas where we can practice our key messaging. For example, when we go to a meeting, and let's say it's a discussion meeting, and it comes around for you to talk, that's a great time to try out your key messaging, see how your audience reacts to it. And I use the rooms as kind of my experimental lab for trying out my messaging to reach the newcomer. I'll share an example with you where that really bombed. There was, I was working on this kind of humorous analogy about drinking. I drink bourbon. And I mentioned to the audience, I think they should market bourbon like cigarettes. You know, you pick up a pack of cigarettes, they got these diseased lungs and these awful, you know, pitchers to try and curtail you from smoking. Well, I think they should market bourbon that way. They should have a picture of a woman with a black eye on the bottle. And nobody laughed because it was too close to home for a lot of women in the audience. And there were a lot of men too, who were the abusers. And I really got a distinct visceral gut reaction that that was not going to ever fly. So I don't use it. So, but sometimes, you know, you can use the rooms to see how things are flying and what works and what doesn't work and minimize the amount of harm you do. I wasn't meaning to be harmful. I was trying to be humorous and also poignant with that analogy, but it just didn't work. And I don't use that other in the context of the speaker workshop. Okay. Before speaking, take time for prayer and meditation. Center yourself. You know, before I speak, especially if I'm doing a live talk in person, I hit the washroom. I got to center myself. I got to center my body. I got to center my mind. I got to center my emotion. I got to bring, because I'm getting wound up. I'm getting excited. There's a certain amount of excitement. And, you know, especially if I got a big room and, you know, you want to deliver something well. So I get centered. I bring my mind and body into that centeredness. And sometimes, you know, if I'm a little too wound up, you know, I use that fear prayer that's given to us in the big book. Let God demonstrate through me what it can do. God, demonstrate your power through me. Give me the right words, the right thoughts to lead this audience to your divine power, you know, and to remove my fear. And, you know, and those types of meditations seem to really work well for me when I'm speaking. Okay. When speaking, focus on your audience. Most importantly, focus on carrying a message to the newcomer. Whenever I would go, I used to hate public speaking. I used to hate the front of the room. I preferred the back of the room, counting the money when I was in secular personal development work. And I never liked it because when I'd go to the front of the room, I was always so focused on me. What do I look like? How am I going to come across? And I would get jittery and I'd get self-conscious. And it would really mess with my ability to deliver a good share. But when I started shifting, I reframed my speaking where I'm focused on my audience. I'm focused on that newcomer. How do I reach the ear of that newcomer that's sitting there in terror, knowing that they're going to drink, use, or act out again, and to deliver a message that gives them, you know, the experience and the strength and hope that there is a solution. And my whole persona and my enjoyment at being in the front of the room changed with that focus. So remember why you're at the podium. You're there to reach the person in the audience, not to look good, not do that. It's nice if that happens, but that's not our purpose. Our purpose is to carry the message. Here's another thing you can do. When you go to the podium, and you can do this on Zoom too, which is really great, but you know, you can also do it when you speak in person. You go to the podium, record yourself. I love the smartphones. You know, the recording function of a smartphone is really well developed. I use my smartphone to record speakers when I'm recording speakers at conventions for the archives, and it does a great job. So record yourself when you go up to the podium. And then after you've recorded yourself, later on, listen to yourself speak. Make notes and revise your share accordingly. And that's really useful. As I said, I learned to figure out what was working and what wasn't working so well. You know, I did a share for St. Catherine's CA group back in 2008. And this was, I was just really getting into the mode of doing speaking locally. And I thought I'm going to record my share. So I did the share, and it really came off really well. And I recorded it. And I was really pleased with it. So I called up at the time, it's called xa-speakers.org. They're still in existence. They're an Icelandic hub of 12-step speakers in all different fellowships. And I called them up and I said, I just heard the most incredible speaker. You got to get his MP3 on your platform. And they said, well, send it to us. And if it's good, we'll post it. So I fired off my MP3. They liked it. They posted it. And some 20,000 downloads later, I've been invited all over the world. I've been to Sweden, Spain, Denmark, all across England, Canada, United States, all because I got a big mouth. But that came as a result of recording myself, listening to myself. And it's kind of like when you do inventory, when you get it out of your head and you put it down on paper, you can objectify it. You can look at it from a different mindset. And that's what I find when you're speaking, record yourself, listen to yourself afterwards, it's really it's got a lot of meat to it to help you improve your share. Okay. Number eight, remember, you'll never have a more accepting and forgiving audience, no matter how bad your share is. Well, that's not true, because I did have a couple of bombs. But most of the time, they want you to do well. They're going to clap for you no matter what. Because, you know, we're decent with one another for the most part in the rooms. An audience is very forgiving. And they accept you for who you are. They know what you are. They know you're an addict. You know, they know you're trying to carry your message to them. So, you know, remember that. They're a great audience to play with. Number nine, share from the I perspective. Avoid using you language. When I speak from the I experienced this. I did that. I found this. It's my story. It's mine. I own it. No one can ever take that away from you. But if I start, and I usually occasionally I use we as an inclusive approach, but I very rarely get into, you know, you need to do this and you need to do that and you shouldn't be doing this and you should be doing that. And it gets preachy really quickly. And nobody likes to be preached at, especially other addicts. So avoid you language, stick to the I perspective, and you'll have a lot less flack in doing so, and a more receptive ear to your story. And number 10, of course, is to have lots of fun. It's fun being at the front of the room. It's fun when you can connect to your audience. There's a dope in that too. And for those of you that perform, or I know we have someone who's done acting here on the channel, you know, when you're a stage performance, when you're interacting with an audience and they're connecting with you, and you're connecting with them, there is an energy that happens. It's dope. It really is a very cool experience to have. And it makes for a lot of fun, and it's really enjoyable. And I really hope you have that experience when you do a live presentation. It's a little more difficult with Zoom, because, you know, we got this buffered computer experience. But an in-person share, when you're connected to your audience, man, it's dope. It really is a lot of fun. Okay. Five ways to conduct yourself when speaking virtually or in person. So let's look at virtual presentations for a moment. So again, most people are on Zoom, although there are other platforms, but for the most part, you're going to be, especially in 12-step, we seem to pretty much settled on the Zoom platform as our application of delivering virtual shares. So 5 points around virtual meeting sharing. One, before presenting, take a look at yourself in the mirror or on camera, and make sure you have your up-close personal face on, right? Women, attention to makeup. You don't want the camera where it's looking up your nose, or the camera's focused on the bald spot top of my head. You know, I want to dress reasonably well. I actually do have pants on. You know, you don't want to be sitting at the desk with no pants on, although I'm sure there are people that do that. You know, you want your best on-camera face. Now, my wife discovered this because she's been doing a lot of Zoom shares. She discovered that function in the video on Zoom settings where you can soften your look. Oh, my God, as a woman, she just went, this is the best thing ever. guys, not so much. But, you know, you want to present yourself in a really appealing, you know, way. Sit comfortably in your chair. I don't recommend you stand when you're speaking. You know, most of us are at either desktops. But you want to be sitting comfortably. You want to be looking at the camera, you know, where it's, you know, positioned in the right way, the right angle, and that sort of thing. And you make eye contact with your camera. One of the things I love about Zoom is I'll pick a square in the grid and I'll speak to that person. Or I'll see someone laughing or engaging with me on the Zoom, and I'll focus on them because there's obviously a rapport going on there. And, you know, and again, that makes it comfortable. It's giving you important feedback as to whether or not your messaging is connecting. When you use a virtual share, use a laptop or a desktop computer rather than your phone. Sometimes that's all we got, but preferably a laptop computer or phone. I'm on a lap or an iMac right at the moment. Your screen is tilted correctly. And like I said, you don't want to see your nostrils or the top of your head. And as I said earlier, watch the facial expressions on your audience grid. If they're engaged, smiling, laughing, nodding heads, you know, watch for that. That gives you feedback as to whether or not you're engaging your audience. And lastly, you want to smile. You want to speak clearly. And as one of the participants mentioned earlier about modulating your tempo for emphasis, resting, pausing, you know, for effect and that kind of stuff. So those are some important points when you're doing a virtual share. When you're doing in-person live meetings, you want to be well-groomed. I know we're a lot more informal now. There was a time if you went to an AA meeting as a speaker, you better be in a suit and tie. There are still some old meeting, fashion meetings like that. Generally, when I go to in-person meeting, I'm in a sports jacket. I have a sweater and a sports jacket on. This is generally my casual professional look. But I'm well groomed. You know, I got up this morning, made sure I was clean shaven, and you know, I don't have much hair to play with these days, so that wasn't too much of a concern. When you're at the podium, stand in one place. I've only seen one speaker do this well, and that was Tom Peters. You know, in Search of Excellence, he would pace back and forth on a stage, and you know, some people actually go into the audience and participate. That takes a certain style to do that. But for the most part, I just, when I go to the front of the podium, I plant my feet and I stand there, and when I'm speaking, I make eye contact with people directly in the audience. I speak to them for a few moments. And then I'll move on to another person and then another person. And I'll focus on people in the back, focus on people in the front or on the side. But I'm making eye contact and I speak to that person and move on. If you're at a podium and there's no mic present, you want to be sure that you're projecting your voice. So when I stand at the podium and there's no mic, I'm just using my own voice volume. I speak to the person at the back of the room so that my voice carries. So often I'll hear a speaker go to the podium and there's no mic and they speak very quietly and you can't hear them, right? And the audience is trying to listen. Nobody wants to be rude and go, speak up, we can't hear you. Sometimes they do, but you know, project your voice, say it loud, say it proud, right? You get more traction shouting it from the rooftops than you do whispering it down the well. Take note of your audience engagement. Again, are they smiling? Are they laughing? Are they nodding their heads? Are they acknowledging the words coming out of your mouth? And again, you want to smile, you want to speak clearly and modulate your tempo for emphasis. Three benefits for speaking. One, it fulfills our tradition five. What's our primary purpose? Everything we do in the fellowship is designed to do one thing, whether it's at the group level, district, area, or the world service level. Everything we do is designed for us to care as recovered members of our fellowship to carry the message, our hope, our faith, our courage, our experience, our strength, and hope to the addict that still suffers. Our job is to be of maximum service to God and our fellow human beings. And I really think meetings, And we're seeing more meetings like this, depending on the fellowship. I know in CA, it can get really a lot like this. It's a pep rally for God. It's a pep rally for the spiritual way of living, right? We don't want to get into morbid, you know, like a group therapy without a therapist or an Oprah wine fest. Oh my God, I've been to meetings like that. Shoot me in the brain pan right now. I want to go to a meeting where everybody's excited about the solution. I found a way out of the hole and this is how I did it. That's what a meeting should be all about. And our share should be a lot about that. Like I said, I'm already an expert in drinking and using. What I don't know is the solution. And that's really what I want to hear from the speaker. So let's communicate that there is a solution. Another reason, the second benefit to speaking. Speaking reinforces our identity as members of a 12-step program. Now, when I was at university, and if anybody likes reading academic articles, you can send me a text message or WhatsApp me. One of my professors had done a longitudinal study in Food Addicts Anonymous, and she was looking at the storytelling in that fellowship, the genre of messages. And like most 12-step fellowships, there were two messages, the recovered message versus the recovering message. And what she found was that recovery stories are consequential for a person's experience of recovery, since it seems that the telling and the retelling of an empowered, recovered narrative with its clear beginnings, turning points, favorable results, may well be critical for stable and consistent recovery. This is what she found. She found, like, the recovered story, like, this is my old life. This is what it was like. This is what my life was like. And this is the way it is now. And it was a very clear, definitive boundary between those two worlds. The old world was gone. They were reborn into a new way of living. And she found that such narration, such identity to the new persona, the new what it meant to be a member of a 12-step fellowship. That's why when I share, I talk about I'm an alcoholic addict who doesn't drink or use. Why do I say it like that? Because I'm reinforcing my new identity in the fellowship that I am an alcoholic addict, which as a self-admitted alcoholic and addict defines, I will drink and I will use again, yet I'm an alcoholic addict who doesn't drink or use. There's a reinforcement of that identity, and it speaks a certain message. And she found that this articulation not only facilitated a member's consistent affiliation with and the appropriation of these 12-step master narratives. I know that's a little heady, but if you like reading this type of documentation, I can actually send you the actual study. Now, just as conversely, she found that those who told the ambiguous, always recovering narrative, where like the old life wasn't necessarily a bad life, the new life isn't necessarily a great life, they keep a cocky foot in the old life and a lazy foot in the new life, and you know the recovered life goes all to hell. And she found that in this study, those that use the always recovering narrative, in which the addict questions the received spiritual principles, they ponder hypothetical life past not actually pursued, they envision abstinence both good and bad, may perpetuate a cyclical life course in which relapse reoccurs and permanent recovery eludes the 12-step member. So in identifying our story, our message of experience, strength, and hope, reinforcing our identity actually plays a vital part in our own recovery, as well as, you know, carrying a useful message to those that suffer. In this study, one of the things I did at university was medical anthropology and the study of alternative healing systems. And I was doing a paper on 12-step healing, and I found such a wealth of really good third-party attestation to the viability of the way in which we carry our message. Scholar found that central to the 12-step recovery culture is the personal story of the recovered addict. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. The member's personal story reinforces the figured world of 12-step recovery. These narratives maintain the boundaries that structure and empower the 12-step recovery culture. By our sharing and the way we share, there was a point back in the 80s where if you went to a speaker meeting, they were always long, worn out drunkologues. That's all they ever told, because each member would hear another member do it that way and go, oh, I guess that's the way we do it. And it got really bad. And then when Joe and Charlie started doing the Big Book Revival and Cliff Bishop with the primary purpose groups out of Austin, Texas, and Wally P with Back to Basics and the Muckers in Toronto and Billy S out of the East Coast of Connecticut with the Big Book Step Study, there was this revival of Big Book narrative. And it's really changed the culture of 12-step a lot in certain areas of AA. And I primarily work in AA and CA. This is where I see it manifest. But it really had an effect. So our story, when we're sharing, we are reinforcing a certain aspect of our 12-step culture. And by sharing personal stories of what we used to be like, members identify as addicts. Their war story conveys important criteria for potential members to identify and label themselves as addicts too. And then lastly, on this heavy, heady note, furthermore, personal testimonies are significant to newcomers because the storylines of the recovered addicts objectify the central cultural elements of a 12-step world, such as the importance of attending meetings, getting a sponsor, helping other suffering addicts, doing service work for the 12-step group. And by listening to these narratives of recovered members, the newcomer learns the culture of our program, learns to cover the culture of 12-step recovery. And the newcomer learns the model of a 12-step testimonial by listening to other members through telling their own story. So how you tell your story, you know, it's going to get modeled back. Sometimes I hear people sharing now, I go, man, that's a word out of my own story. You know, they'll use certain words, like I use the liar analogy and things like that, because I know the culture is picking it up and going, that's useful, that's helpful. And it gets reinforced. And it goes on to, the newcomer comes to understand their own life as a member of a 12-step program. The 12-step rhetorical language provides an attractive element that connects the newcomer to the 12-step culture and assures them that their drinking, using, or acting out problem can be solved, resulting in behavioral transformation of newcomers, of what we say in our big book, a profound alteration in our reaction to life. So those are the three big, really important things that are underpinning our share when we carry the message in the rooms. Now, last thing on the three benefits of speaking, Bill W. suddenly realized in order to save himself, he must carry his message to another alcoholic. It is important for the newcomers to realize that your attempt to pass this message, our message of experience, strength, and hope onto them, plays a vital part in your recovery. Actually, they may be helping you more than you're helping them. Every time I've shared the message, whether at the podium, whether in the workshop or working one-on-one, I always learn something new about myself. I learn something new about newcomers. I learn something new about the program. It's an amazing journey. And it's been working like that in my life for, it's going to be 21 years next week on the 21st November. Oh my God. So these are the benefits of speaking. And as I said, I'm going to publish this slideshow along with the audio so you can review it and all your notes are there. And like I said, if anyone likes reading academic journals, you send me a text and I'll send you the actual study that my professor had worked on. Okay, three key elements for a compelling story. Number one. Our stories, this is structure. There should be a certain structure to your share. And our story, and our book is very specific about how we do that. It says our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, not what it was like, what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. So that's the general structure of a 12-step narrative. Two. Our story's got to have some kind of substance. As our big book says, the message which can interest and hold these alcoholic addicted people must have depth and weight. And three is outcome. We believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that the newcomer will be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. These are the three key elements of a really good, compelling story. You have the story, you have the meat, but when we structure it with, give it a structure, emphasize the substance of our story, the outcome is always from the newcomer. I'm like you, you're like me, you don't do it anymore, and I want what you have. Okay, so when we share our stories, remember to carry the message, not the wreckage. Avoid drunkalogs and junkie pride stories. As I said, you don't want your share to be an Oprah wine fest or, you know, these open, disgusting meetings, group therapy without a therapist and so forth. We're already well adept at how to drink, use, and act out. So three ways we can win the entire confidence of a newcomer. You know, I really love the way the big book is written because it just lays it out so clearly. Number one, we're ex-problematics. We don't do it anymore. Now, if you want to stop and you can't stop and you meet someone in the rooms who has stopped, that's very compelling to someone who wants to stop and can't stop. So number one, we're ex-problematics. Two, we've got a solution. In our case, usually it's the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We got a solution, 12 steps. And three, we're properly armed with the facts about ourselves. We know what it means to be an addict. We've lived in that inescapable hole. We understand where the newcomer is at and their dilemma, their lack of power. We understand that. We've been there. You know, in anthropology, they referred to the recovered addict. We're like wounded healers. We've earned the right to share our story because we have been wounded through our own experience and we have found a way out and we can heal others, wounded healers. I'm never crazy about that definition, but that's the way the anthropologists look at the nature of what we do in terms of our healing approach to addiction, wounded healers. Okay. Three types of shares. Number one, introduction. You know, your introduction is a share in itself. How do you introduce yourself? That's usually a minute or less when you go around the room and you get to introduce yourself. There's an opportunity to try out a key message. Qualifying. Sometimes, you know, when you're asked to chair a meeting, you have to qualify in 3 minutes or less. AA here in Toronto does that a lot. If you're chairing a meeting, you have to qualify as a chair and you get a 3 minute share to do. And then, of course, as a main speaker, sharing your hope, faith, and courage. And that could be for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. Generally, most shares are 20 to 40 minutes. A lot of meetings I go to now that it's a 30-minute share. Usually when I do a live in-person convention share, it's a full 60 minutes. Now, when you're sharing... And one of the reasons why I ask you to structure your presentation and write it down is to know your share. I know my share. I know all my key messages. I've been sharing for a while and I've been on the circuit a while, but I really know my material. So sometimes, you know, someone say, well, Cameron, we'd like you to share, but it's only 15 minutes. Well, I can do a 15-minute share and I can make it pretty dynamic because I know what content to deliver in 15 minutes. Just as conversely, if they give me 45 minutes, I know what I can share in that. Recently, I was asked to share at an AA meeting, and I was told I was going to have at least 20 minutes to share. So I prepared a 20-minute share, and I'm going to deliver a 20-minute share. But it was a medallion, and you know how people love to spread out the accolades to the birthday person. And by the time they got to the speaker, it's 7 minutes to the hour when they close. So they basically says, Cameron, you got 7 minutes to share a message of experience, strength, and hope that's going to rock the room. That's kind of daunting. Now, if I prepared, if all I know is this 20-minute share and all of a sudden I got 7 minutes, man, that can be very disorienting to someone who doesn't have or an idea of what they can share in 7 minutes versus 20. So know your material, know what you can use, know what you can add, know what you can drop. And so I basically did a 7-minute share and it went over really well. People were really moved by it in 7 minutes because I knew which messages I needed to convey and I only had 7 minutes to do it. And I had to be ruthless as to what I would keep and what would I discard in that time frame. So know your presentation and your key messages. Now, sometimes as a speaker, you can accept or decline. Sometimes I've been asked, we want you to share, but you only got 15. I don't do it a lot now, but I used to say, I can't do it. I can't do a good job in 15 minutes. I either get a minimum of 30 or find another speaker. And some people say, well, we got to find another speaker then. And that's okay. But, you know, that now I know my talk so well, I'm confident I can deliver. If I can deliver just an introduction share that really kicks, you know, some emphasis in the room, surely I can work with any time frame. And I've learned to do that because I'm always trying to be useful or helpful to the crowd, no matter what time frame I get. Okay. introducing herself. Now, you can have a lot of fun with introducing yourself. These are some of the introductions that I've heard. The most common one I hear in AA is, "Hi, my name's Cameron. I'm a recovering alcoholic." Now, that is my least favorite. I never identify as recovering, as a recovering addict or a recovering alcoholic. I do like, "Hi, my name's Cameron." Now, I get why most people will say, "Hi, my name is, and I'm an alcoholic," or "My name is, and I'm an addict," or "a drug addict," or whatever, to identify to the people in the room that they're in the right spot, especially if you're a newcomer. Am I in the right spot? Is this a meeting for me? And then you hear people going, "Well, I'm an addict. I'm an addict. I'm an alcoholic." So I get that, but it doesn't do a lot. And it's just part of being part of the crowd. I don't know about you, but I like to stand out. I'm very important, you know. So I like to have a lot of fun with my introductions. So I don't use "I'm a recovering addict." Now, sometimes I'll say, "Hi, my name's Cameron. I'm a recovered addict." And I'll expand on that. And by recovered, I mean I have been relieved from that obsession to drink or use by the power of a higher power within me that allows me to easily control my desire to drink or use. And thus I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I want to put some extra emphasis and define my terms, what I mean by recovered. "Hi, my name's Cameron. I'm a member of Cocaine Anonymous." I sometimes use that. Or even our book signifies that when speaking publicly, we identify as a member of the fellowship. My favorite lately has always been, "Hi, my name's Cameron. I'm an addict. I'm an alcoholic addict who doesn't drink or use." Because that's got a double message. I'm identifying as an alcoholic. Now, understanding an alcoholic addict is someone who can't stop drinking or using. That's what makes us alcoholics and addicts. We can't stop. But to introduce myself as an alcoholic addict who doesn't drink or use is tied in with that, this is what it means to be a member of a 12-step program. I've been relieved of my obsession. I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I'm an alcoholic addict who doesn't drink or use. Another one is a variation of the theme, "Hi, my name's Cameron. I'm an addict who knows how to stop." And that's very compelling to someone who wants to stop but can't stop. If I'm in I do this sometimes when I'm in an AA room and there's a lot of blue hairs in the room. Although I'm getting blue-haired myself lately at 67. I'll go, "Hi, you here? I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic." A lot of stodgy old guys, old-timers with 30, 40 years of sobriety. And I go, "Hi, my name's Cameron. I'm an intelligent agent, a spearhead of God's ever-advancing creation, and it's great to be here." And the old-timer, "Oh, who does he think he is? Oh, my God. What kind of an introduction is that?" You know, but it's fun, you know, and it resonates with some of the people in the rooms. You know, they go, "Wow, I want what he has. I want to be an intelligent agent. I want to be a spirit of God's ever advancing creation." So give some thought to how you like to introduce yourself. Say it loud, say it proud, have some fun with it. Remember, it's about carrying the message. I'm not just, you know, cracking off for the sake of standing out. I'm mindful about why I'm saying what I'm saying. Because I'm trying to reach the newcomer who's sitting there thinking, "Is there any hope for me?" Yeah, there is. I'm like you, and you're like me, but I don't do it anymore. Wow, how do you do that? You know, and you take them on that journey. Qualifying as an addict. What qualifies you to share a message? What are the facts about yourself? What can you say in 3 minutes or less that will persuade those in the meeting to say, "Yes, I'm like you, and you are like me, but you don't do it anymore"? So, key elements in a qualification. What are they? Lack of power, lack of control. That's universal. Whether you're a drug addict, alcoholic, sex addict, food addict, cutter, codependent, gambler, whatever, we all share a universal element to what makes us addicts. We have no power and we have no control. I have no power to stop, and once I do pick up, I can't control how long it's going to last. We want to position what we're like and what we're like today. You know, what was I like as an untreated addict? What am I like today? So you present the old self and you present the new self. So when I'm asked to share, when I qualify, let me qualify as an addict. My name's Cameron. I'm a member of Cocaine Anonymous, an alcoholic addict, doesn't drink or use. And if you think about that, that's rather paradoxical, because for 26 years, from the age of 20 to the age of 46, I drank and used drugs morning, noon, and night. That was my God, the God of cocaine, the God of marijuana, the God of bourbon. This was a powerful God in my life. And I loved this God with all my life and all my heart. And daily I ate the sacraments of my religion to cocaine and bourbon and marijuana. And in the beginning, it was wonderful. It was all fun because I didn't feel restless, irritable, discontented, bored, or depressed. But then, you know, because I want to be this way 24/7, it started to be fun with problems. And then in the end, it was nothing but problems. And I really wanted to stop. And I found that I couldn't stop. And when I would pick up, I didn't know how long I would last. It would go on for a night, a day, a week, a month, a year, maybe longer. I have no idea. And then I would come out of this haze in a moment of clarity and go, oh my God, I got to stop. I can't go on like this. I'm full of horror, remorse, and hopelessness. And I make a firm resolution not to do it again. And then because I can't live with it anymore. I don't know how to live without it. And then what happens is I start drying out sobriety and I get restless, irritable, discontented, bored, depressed. And this twist of thinking, this liar in my head says, you need a drink, you need a drug. And it always won the argument. And I would pick up a drink, I'd pick up a drug, and out I'd go again. And I go around that wheel of misfortune, spree, remorse, resolution, pursuing my love to the gates of insanity or death. Now, most people can relate to that, those elements of that qualification. But what's my life like today? I'm 67. I'm in great health. I rebuilt my marriage, 34 years, love and trust of my children. Just recently became a grandfather. My liver went back to normal, traveled all over the world, went back to university. Man, it's a stellar life being a member of Cocaine Anonymous. I'm an alcoholic addict, doesn't drink or use. That was roughly 3-4 minutes. But you get the point. There's a lot of content in such a short message. Okay. And this is an easy thing. You can think about your introduction, how you want to introduce yourself. Think about your qualification, jot it down. You know, it's only a paragraph or two. It's only a 3-minute share, but you will be asked to qualify from time to time. Think of it like your 3-minute elevator talk. That's what it really is in speaking terms. It's the elevator talk. All right. Main speaker share. Now, you can play with this structure. And when I do my shares, I mix it up. But typically, I always open by introducing myself. My name's Cameron. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an alcoholic who doesn't drink, right? Or whatever fellowship I'm involved with. Share what we used to be like. Now, this is where we tell an effective war story and win the newcomer's confidence. That's where we're sharing that's our qualification story. That's our 3-minute. These are the things that define me. Now, I use 4 things when I share my step one. You know, I talk about being fired from every job. I talk about using needles and leaving my dirty needles around the house for my children to play with and feeling awful as a father, but it did not have the power to sober me up. I like the effect more than my wife. My wife would beg, plead, offer frothy emotional appeals, threaten me with divorce. But I like the effect of drugs and alcohol more than my own marriage. I like it so much that I'm willing to risk my life. Think of what you're willing to risk. You know, my doctor diagnosed me with liver disease and said I was going to die unless I stopped drinking. The first thought that crossed my mind was, I need a drink right now. And I drank for 3 more years on that news. Now, those are just 4 brief examples from my story, but they qualify me. And a lot of people can resonate with, they may not have that specific example, but they understand the dynamic of each example and how it might play out in their own lives. And they begin to identify, that's like me, that's like me, that's like me. And then we share what happened. Now, this is an important part. This is the bridge between our old life and the new life. What happened? How'd you find yourself in the rooms of 12-step? How did you hit bottom, reaching a turning point, found that jumping off place, that moment of clarity? How you found and worked a solution. So, you know, when I do my what happened, you know, my last drink, I was fishing for brown trout. This is my what happened story. I was fishing for brown trout. It was on October 31st, 2003. Now, my sobriety birthday is November 21st, 2003. But on October 31st, 2003, I'm fishing for brown trout. I caught two that day, about 18 inches in length. It was a beautiful, beautiful fishing. It was a beautiful day. I'm drinking cold Corona beers and smoking $400 an ounce dope. And I'm miserable inside and out. I hated everyone and everything, including myself. And I thought, I don't want to live like this anymore, and had a moment of clarity. And I came home and I said to my wife, I'm quitting. I'm stopping. I'm no longer drinking or smoking or doing drugs, and I'm going to AA. And I remember my wife just falling to her knees and sobbing. And that was a brutal moment because I got such a visceral hit of how much damage I had done to my family in her reaction to that moment. And so I entered the rooms of AA. And I went to one of those open, disgusting meetings. I didn't find a solution-based meeting. It was the local meeting. I went to it. I had no idea what they did in AA meetings, but it was one of those open, disgusting meetings. And I sat there for 8 months in sobriety, drying out, getting more restless, more irritable, more discontented, more bored and depressed. And about 8 months in, I was asked to share about step four. And I let it rip because I was in a mood. And it was bigoted, and it was misogynistic, and it was vulgar and foul. And I just vomited all over the audience in the most rude and vulgar way. And at the end of the share, nobody said anything. But I knew nobody in that room felt good, and I sure as heck didn't feel good. And I thought, if this is my life, going to meetings, sharing this crap all the time, I'd rather drink. And I was leaving the meeting to go drink. And a guy grabbed me, said, "Cameron, I'm watching you die. Let me show you how to work a program." And we didn't go to another meeting. We went to a coffee shop. We opened up big books and we started reading the instructions and doing the steps. And that man saved my life. And that's what, and now what happened? Now, why is my birthday November 21st as opposed to October 31st? So I decided I'm not drinking anymore. I'm not smoking cigarettes anymore. I'm not doing any drugs. On November 20th, my best friend invited me to the food show, and they were doing beers from around the world. Oh my God. But they were just taste in communion cups. You ever seen a communion cup? Like it's a real tiny, tiny cup. And they would only fill it up with maybe a half of cup with beer. And I thought, well, that ain't a beer. That's just like a sip. That isn't even a sip. And I thought, how could that hurt? But when you drink like 400 of them, it kind of affects your sobriety. So that's why my sobriety date is November 21st, 2003. And that's how I found the rooms of 12 steps. And then you want to share what your life is like today. These are your bragging rights. This is where you get to just share how the magic of the programs worked in your life. So talk about the promises fulfilled. Talk about how your life has taken on a new meaning. Talk about how you found the fellowship you crave. So, you know, I talk about my marriage. I talk about my children. Talk about going to university, traveling around the world, you know, and all the things that I do. It's the magic of what this program has done for my life and how it's affected those that I love, especially my family. And then you want to close your talk, have a signature sign off. My signature sign off is whatever last message I do, I always close with, "And I'm for that. How about you?" It's my typical signature. Think about a signature because it's kind of like you're like, it's a signature. It separates you from the rest of the crowd, right? It makes you stand out, and it's a lot of fun. You can have a lot of fun with signature sign offs. Okay. So let's talk about opening your share. So we've already looked at different ways you can introduce yourself. Now, you can also be impactful. You can tell a short, humorous analogy or a story. You could cite a big book quote. If I'm talking about, you know, sponsorship, I'll open with, "Nothing ensures immunity against drinking or using as intensive work with other alcoholics and addicts. It works when all the other activities fail." Page 89, big book, right? There's an opening big book quote. Sometimes it's fun to open up with a joke. If you got the chutzpah to open up with a joke, I sometimes open up with a joke. So a hard user and a real addict go see their dealer. And the dealer says, "You won't believe it, but I have got this magic eight ball of crack cocaine. It is the most bling crack you'll ever smoke. And here's the thing, no matter how much you chip off the eight ball, it never loses its volume. It's eternal." And the hard user goes, "Well, I'll take one of those." But what does the real addict say? "You better give me three." Right? So you can tell a joke. Some of you may have heard my share where I talk about the addict in the hole, and the family tries to bail them out. The medical community, the religious community, the treatment center community. I use that story a lot, analogy a lot in my shares. Sometimes you can just open with a question. "Hey, are you working a program? Are you working with newcomers?" Just hit them hard with the key message. "Hey, are you working with newcomers?" Today I opened with, I did a share where I worked the steps backwards, and I opened up with a 12-step program is not a sprint. It's a marathon for life. And I meet a lot of sprinters who relapse, and then I go into my share, right? So you can have some fun with this. Introducing, humorous analogy, short story, or cite a big book quote. Great way to kick things off, as opposed to, you know, just your, again, you can do your standard, you know, "Hi, my name's such and such, and I'm, you know, I'm an alcoholic addict," or whatever. But if you want to stand out and really kind of have some fun and impact your audience, give some thought to these three different ways you can play with opening your share. What we used to be like. So this is where we get to share our war story. Now, how you share your war story can make the difference between something impactful and something, "Oh my God, when's it going to end? Shoot me in the brain pan." And again, our big book is very specific on how we do this. Tell the newcomers enough about your drinking, using, or acting out habits and symptoms, and get them encouraged to speak to themselves. Now, in a share, you're not getting them to speak, but you're getting them in their minds thinking, "Yeah, that's me, that's me, that's me." So be mindful about the things you're sharing, the examples from your war story. And what are we trying to convey in those examples? Our lack of power, right? And our inability to control it. Tell them how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. I always share the story. I went to, back in the 80s when I worked the Financial District of Toronto, and I worked in the downtown district. My work attire was a 3-piece pinstripe suit. And every Friday, there'd always be a party going on. I remember going to this party, and all the men are in their suits and all the women are in their business attire. And cocaine was really rampant back in those days. Good cocaine. Escobar was running the cocaine world cartels at that time. And there were a lot of drinking. So I go to this very posh condominium. Everyone's dressed to the nines. And there's a lot of, you know, coke and drinking going on. And I sit on the sofa, and this guy says to me, "Cameron, would you like a few lines of coke?" I said, "I'd love a few lines of coke." So as he's cutting out the lines, now I'm an intravenous cocaine user. So I take my suit jacket off. I roll up my sleeve. My arms are full of track marks. I put a needle and spoon on the table, and I start to mix up my hit. And the party stopped. It absolutely went dead quiet. And the hostess walks up to me and goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm going to do my lines." She says, "You can't shoot up like some junkie in the middle of our little soiree here. You got to go." And my retort was, what? "You're judging me on my delivery system? Is this what's going on?" And I was politely escorted to the door with my lines, of course. I didn't leave them behind. I took them with me. But, you know, as I'm leaving, I'm thinking, I don't use like these people. There's something different about the way I use. And every alcoholic and addict has a story like that, where they realize a moment in their life where they realize there was something different about them. That's a good point in your war story to emphasize. Give them an account of the struggles you failed. You know, I don't want to hear the war story. I want to hear all the different ways I tried to stop. And you can have some fun with it. You know, willpower, giving my money away, going to treatment centers, going to spiritual retreats, reading my book, getting a sponsor, you know, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. None of these had the power to keep me stopped, to stay stopped. Failed strat, and every addict can relate to those failed strategies. They're universal. The willpower strategy, which fails all of us, is used by every kind of addict, whether you're a drug addict, alcoholic, sex addict, food addict, whatever. So the secular human strategies that failed to hold us in check are universal, and people identify. I tried that. I tried that. I tried that. And then lastly, show the newcomer how our minds are twisted, how our minds lie to us. I use the analogy of the liar. And I talk about the institute it belongs to, Bullshit Inc. And I've added two other elements to it. They've hired these really great lawyers called Screw You and Screw Me. And they're really brilliant lawyers, and they always win the argument as to why I should pick up a drink or a drug. Most addicts can relate to that analogy because they understand what sickness is going on in their head. So what we used to be like. And again, you have your story. The meat and potatoes are your story. But nested in this kind of structure, you can have a lot of fun bringing out in your own words what you are like. And that will resonate with people. What happened? Now tell them exactly what happened to you. And I've already shared this with you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. I remember my sponsor saying to me, I looked at him. I knew this guy. I knew what a hopeless alcoholic pill popper he was. And yet here he was, fresh skinned and glowing, sober like Abby Thatcher. And what happened to you? And he said, I found God. And I went, oh God, not that. But he won my confidence because something happened to him and I wanted what he had. Describe your last bottom, the jumping off place. As I said, you know, fishing for brown trout. Talk about how you found your sponsor. I met him in the rooms eight months in sobriety. Share your experience of attending meetings, how and when you started your step work, and share about your service work that I've done. And I've done a lot of service work. I got an extensive service resume. I've set up groups. I've been GSR, secretary, treasurer. I've served on 9 conventions in my area. I've served on every area standing committee. I've been the world archivist for Cocaine Anonymous. But lately, I've been moving towards just mentoring others. This is how this workshop came about, where I thought it would be fun to teach people how to improve their talks so that they can, you know, it's fun. If you like speaking and you'd like to get out there on the circuit and cram into an economy class airplane seat and travel 7 hours and go over to Europe, you know, this is a great way to do it. Okay. And then lastly, what we're like now. Talk about the promises fulfilled in your life. Talk about how your health, your family, your work life has changed, right? Talk about, you know, the fellowship you found, the friends you have. I got friends all over the world. What a magical fellowship it really is to play in and be a part of and to be useful and of maximum service to God and our fellow human beings. And then, of course, your signature sign-off. You can close with a short story, an analogy, or a big book quote. So you can open this way, and you can sign off this way. And come up with your own distinct way. You know, I have one or two signature closings that I use to kind of signify, oh, that was a Cameron share. And it makes for being memorable. And I get often invited back to share many places. And that is how we carry the message. Once again, if you like what we do here and you want to see it continue, please consider making a seventh donation at caservicesponsorship.org. It does offset our Zoom costs, and there are Zoom costs and website costs that go with what we do on CA Service Sponsorship. And lastly, just to close here, I look forward to hearing your share. So when you get a chance to be invited, I'd like to hear about it. I'm going to put my chat information in the chat there. You can reach out to me. And if you've got a share coming up and you want to work on it, you give me a call and I'll set up a Zoom channel and you can present your talk to me. I'll record it for you both visually and auditorily. And then I'll send it back to you and you can look at it and critique it. And then if you want, you can call me back and re-present and we can work together on taking your share to whatever level you want to take with it. And my closing thought is, this is my signature sign off. You can all be circuit speakers. And I'm for that. How about you? God bless. See you on the circuit. And thanks for joining me here today.